This is Bill Dirks, archivist, interviewing two old-timers from Holden Village, though they are quite young in spirit and in years yet. Phyllis Anderson and Darrell Lundby. And the early years were during the 60s, and they were part of the group that came up for this 25th anniversary celebration this past Wednesday. The 26th. Will you identify yourself, Phyllis, as by voice, so we can hear what you have to say?
I'm Phyllis. Hi.
Yeah. Where do you live?
My present home is in Broadhead, Wisconsin, which is south of Madison.
All right.
What else do you want to know?
Okay, we'll come back to you. Darrell?
I'm Darrell Lundby. From Portland, Oregon.
All right. When you were up here, what were you doing?
Well, I first came to Holden officially as an intern from Luther Seminary, which is now Luther Northwestern Seminary. So I was here on a call of the American Lutheran Church, the Lutheran Church in America, and the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod to serve an internship that would have two parts. One part would be to work here with the program and with the regular venture of the village, and then to travel in the interest of generating interest in Holden, but particularly to do some consultative work with young adults in those three church bodies around the country.
All right, we'll get back to you. Phyllis?
Well, I came here in 1966 in June from New York City, where the walls closed in on me, and I had a roommate who had been here once before, and I think I don't remember what year she was here, and she showed me some pictures, and then somewhere along the line, Carol Hinderly was at Koinonia, which is the Bible camp in New York's upstate New York. And I went there to hear him. And when one session was all over with Carol, I went up to him and I said, I want to go to Holden so bad I can taste it. And all he said was, come along. So I arrived here in June, and my assignment was to be working on the housekeeping crew.
This is June of 66.
June of 66. Probably the hardest thing I ever did in my life, and probably the greatest joy I ever had in my life.
Being on housekeeping.
Yeah, and just being here.
You want to describe housekeeping to us?
Housekeeping in those wonderful days meant I was in charge of Lodge 3, and I was the only one who took care of Lodge 3 outside of the help that came in from guests and some of the faculty. I distinctly remember Elmer and Ginny Witt and the kids coming to help me and that sort of thing. Housekeeping, there were very few sheets. There were very few towels. So bed making was wait upon the laundry to get things dry, and it was wet at the beginning of that stay, as I recall, and it was forever to get things done. I had come from New York, where everything had to be done yesterday instead of, you know, tomorrow, and it was frustrating, but you kind of mellowed out, as in today's terminology. Mopped floors. Every room that was cleaned had to be mopped, which was so much fun because of all the sand that went in, or the tailing dust. Each room took a bucket of water, you know, and that was done once a week, but you mopped the hallway floors every day. You would clean the johns with...
They were without carpets then.
Yeah, without carpets.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That started changing with Lodge 4, I think in the fall of 66, maybe this is the fall of 67.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It was a fun.
Yeah, you had fun.
Yeah, I had fun. It was sometimes. Fernie Olson from Spokane was the head of the housekeeping crew, and if she left, I somehow got assigned, because I was one of the older ones that around here on the crew. I was assigned her job and had my work to do in keeping up with the rest of the kids. Which, you know, as we were saying today when we were looking at slides, that several of these kids could go off on weekend jaunts to Donkey or Heart Lake or Holden Lake, and I had to do my work and their work. And sometimes it makes me very aggravated, and then the other times I think, oh, I'm glad they got to go. I got to work. I'm glad they got to go.
Did you get to go too?
I went on two hikes.
Oh, all that time?
All that time. And I did get up 10 mile. Hmm. But I did go to Holden Lake, or Heart Lake first, and then to Holden Lake.
It seems to me, as I remember, that somewhere along the line you had to bring sleeping bags up here before you had the sheets.
Oh.
You remember anything by hearing
about that? I brought a sleeping bag. I believe I did have a sleeping bag. It was not a wonderful sleeping bag. I think we did slept in sleeping bag. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I could do that today, but I'm older.
Can you add anything to that right now, to what you're talking about?
Yeah, I can remember the first summer I was here, we did, I think all the staff people used sleeping bags for their own living.
What year was that?
That was 64.
64.
Right.
Because Doris and I and the kids came up here in 65.
Okay.
And that was the first year you didn't have to bring sleeping bags.
Yeah, all right.
Okay, that gives us a time.
I don't know, I was going to have to think about this. Wholeheartedly.
You know,
all the things.
You know, the one of the characteristics I think that Phyllis has alluded to also in those earlier years was that people shared a lot of the tasks. It wasn't quite as carefully divided up into categories as it became later on. I know I served as a registrar that year, but that also meant that I worked with the volunteer crew in a little bit in housekeeping, although I tried to avoid that most of the time. But I did a fair amount of baggage hauling and commuting up and down from the lake in bringing in new guests and taking out.
But this was before you started your interning, wasn't it?
No, that was the first summer of my internship.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, how did you get started on the intern thing?
How did I get started on that?
Yeah.
Well, I was at Luther Seminary, and Carol Enderley was also teaching at Luther Seminary. And I knew about the village, as I had visited here a few days the summer before, and also had read about the experiment. And Carol had been called then as the permanent director. Part of the concern of Holden was to try to gain some wider visibility for this place. And I was interested in public relations work and communicating, and so I guess it was a mutual desire on the part of Carol and Holden to have some additional help in communicating, and my desire to do that. And so I began to explore that with the faculty at Luther Seminary, and through the course of some negotiations, they were agreed that this would be a suitable way for me to spend an internship, and so the package was put together, and the Holden board decided that it was a desirable way for them to gain some extra help. So that's the way the relationship was put together. I came to Holden to Luther Seminary having had some experience working in public relations at Augustana College before, and so I guess that had gotten a bit in my blood, and I was ripe for another experience of doing that sort of thing.
So after you got here, what happened?
Well, after I got here, we began setting up the registration office, which then was in the dining room. At one corner of the dining room, we had the registration office, and we gained a volunteer crew for the summer, which I also became the coordinator for. And
this,
I recall
this was from Luther Northwestern, or where were you at the time here?
Well, when I came here,
yeah.
I was beginning the internship. Several of the volunteer staff came from Luther Seminary, but they came from all over the country, as they still do now, but in fewer numbers. I don't remember exactly how many we had that time. I think maybe somewhere between 30 and 50 that we had full-time on the summer staff. Most of them stayed the entire summer. We developed a very intimate community. I remember one of the hardest things I did was to do a daily Bible study with that volunteer staff through that summer. But a very close-knit community was developed among those people.
You felt you profited from your experience here?
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Oh, my. I've said over and over again, and I suppose I would be... I would have to say this a little carefully in the presence of my seminary professors, but my experience at Holden was the way in which I began to integrate theological education into my life.
Well, I think today that they would agree with you that that's probably true. A lot of it's passed in the course of the years since that time.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of seminaries have changed a lot too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Become more integrated in the daily life of people. All right, Phyllis?
Daryl said something that, to the point of doing other things beside our assigned job, I remember trying to figure out what time it was and what time dinner might be going to be, or getting up early in the morning than we should have been getting up, and breakfast was at 6. And then we went about our work. We not only made beds or were bus drivers or whatever else, we also had, girls also had to come in and put little skirts on and go in and serve meals in the dining hall. And there was, everybody was assigned to a team of dishwashers, and all of which added to the burden of the day, but as we experienced this week, the joy of the day, because there was a small group that you weren't working with all the time coming together to do this dirty pots and pans. So it was just, and then, just lots of fun in doing and in sharing.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of joy
mm-hmm.
in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of griping, I suppose, at the same time, because you only remember the very best.
Well, it offered you an opportunity to become acquainted
better
with the whole
relationships.
Whole group.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think there really was a close sense of community within the whole village. And the staff was very influential in generating that spirit. The numbers were smaller than they are today, and they were in later years. So it was easier, I suppose, to develop that sense of community. But I remember the staff really being a strong influence in generating that joy of work, joy of play, and joy of sharing stories of each person's journey. There was a spirit that became very contagious toward those who came as visitors. And very seldom, or very frequently anyway, we would see people come in the village with one perspective and would be leaving with a very different perspective on life. was a very visible change that had occurred in that period of time.
This place has shaped me in probably more than any place else I've ever been. I know it has. Because of community, because of the gospel, and all kinds of, you know, and the one-on-one and the sharing and things. It's a marvelous place to have been at a, you know, in the mid of my life, probably. Not really. I guess I got a few more years to go.
Oh, I think so. Yeah. You were, I also remember vaguely, you were at Chelan.
Mm-hmm.
Is the answering service down there? What?
Go ahead and ask the question.
Yeah, we didn't have an answering service other than that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, now we have direct answering service.
Right, okay.
Into Fields Point.
Yeah.
You operated the office there and
mm-hmm,
so forth?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about
I did all kinds of really nutty things after I became the unsedated, or whatever the word is, straight, trying to be a very ladylike New York City girl from the Midwest. And when I got to here, I let my hair down and had such a really good time. One day, Carolyn Werner Jansen called me into the office, and I thought, what have I done? Like being called into the principal's office. I thought I had really screwed
up. Which
office
are you talking
about? Oh, into his office.
Office
up here.
Yeah.
And they asked me if I would like to be the secretary for Holden, because Karen Buge was leaving. And I just looked at them, and I said, no. And they told me what I was going to do, and that would be they were going to move the office from Seattle into Chelan. And they said that because the pastor in Chelan was being overly burdened and taxed with people knocking at their door, looking for a place to stay, and asking for information, and the community of Chelan not knowing what was going on, that would be part of my job. And I said no. And I walked out of that office, and I felt pretty good about saying no, except about 2 days later, I thought, what did I do? What did I say? And I tore back into the office and said, I gotta talk to you two. And I said, I want the job. And then I thought, but maybe they've asked someone else. And that they had. So I went home end of August and hadn't unpacked from moving from New York in the first place, so I gathered up my things and came back by the end of September, and was introduced into the office work as it was supposed to be done.
Where was this now?
This is back up here at the village.
Okay.
And then somewhere between the 1st of it must have been by the 1st of November then, the office was officially moved to Chelan, and the office was in the radio station. And there, my job was to communicate between Werner and Carol. It was to communicate between, by that time they had there was a radio from the office here in the village to Stehekin, and emergency messages went out that way and came in that way, and I believe maybe once a day, unless there was a real emergency, and then they had some button that they could press and get Stehekin's attention by some blaring horn down there. But anyway, my job was to write letters. As the mail came, I sorted. And I don't know how many hours I put in typing letters to people who were inquiring about Holden Village, and had a ball writing letters. I don't write a letter anymore to anyone, but at that time it was a lot of fun. People would ask questions, and I would try to answer. If I couldn't answer the questions, the letter went up on the boat to Werner. Or I might get on the phone and call Carol and say, now what do I do? I was on 24-hour call, and I I guess at first I believed that that's what it meant, 24-hour call, that when I left the office, I went home, you know, via the post office and went home. But then the fun part of that was that once a month I got to come up here and be a part of the community. That was the first year that there was a definite winter program up here. Before it had been people caretaking, but they began the first of the winter program.
What was that?
Well,
what year?
That was 1966.
Oh,
yeah, okay. This was, I haven't gone beyond 1966, because that was the fun part.
Well, John Grauber and Elise hadn't gotten in.
No, they weren't here yet. No, and well, the following summer I housed staff. I had this big barn of an apartment over a garage. It had the loveliest view of the lake, up the lake. So I had that look so I could feel close to the village. But I housed staff. I ran errands. I ran to 25 Mile Creek. A guy met the bus in Chelan, and at that time there was a bus that came from Spokane and Seattle into Wenatchee and onto Chelan. And then took the people, if there was anybody, to the boat dock in Chelan, if that's where they wanted to go. If they wanted to go to 25 Mile Creek, I went to 25 Mile with them. I had a Ford Econoline that was the village's, that was mine to use as I saw fit, for my personal use as well as for the village use. And it was a marvelous way to meet people. And some of those people now this week I have re-met, including you, and it's been really a fun thing.
Now let me get straight in my own mind. You evidently Carol and Werner were not in the same area.
No, Werner was up here.
Up here.
Okay, Werner had moved
in
also from Seattle mm-hmm. to Holden, and in the meantime he was married, I don't remember, June, July, to one of the girls that was on the staff.
September
was it? See, I don't remember when the wedding was. Yes, because I wasn't here for it. Yes, I cried a lot because I wasn't here. And Carol was in Minneapolis, in his home in Minneapolis, when he was home. He could be out working, was most of the time out working for the village, but at least I knew where I could find him, because I always had some kind of a schedule of his.
Okay, so you were the liaison between
mm-hmm.
Carol and Werner
mm-hmm.
then
yeah.
for that period of time.
Yeah.
How long were you in that office then?
From that fall until
fall of 66.
Until the late fall of 1970.
Yeah.
And I continued to work part time up here that winter
mm-hmm.
until I went down the 1st of March.
That's
71, right. So, must say, sometimes a very frustrating position to be in, because I watched people get on the boat and go to Holden. And sometimes there were people from the staff the year before, or somebody that I knew very well, and they were going to Holden, but I was waving, trying to keep this, you know, just very frustrating sometimes. And that I always knew, though, that I would be up here once a month, sometime. Sometimes it might, for the weekend, I'd come up maybe
okay.
on Friday, maybe Saturday,
nobody,
depending on when the 4th of July
yeah,
was.
Nobody covered the phone, though, did they?
A couple of times they sent people down. I don't remember more than twice. They used my apartment in the Econoline, and I don't remember much more.
Mm-hmm.
If I had known 25 years ago I was going to be doing this, I would have written a book, you know. Just really exciting things to
you
know, for
write
me.
A book, yeah.
Oh, I know I could, yes. I probably got several books I could write, but.
I remember one of those moments when you were at Chelan. And wondering whether you might be able to come to Holden
mm-hmm.
in 67 when I was I was then doing some additional volunteer work for Holden and arrived in Chelan about a week before Christmas. And you were wondering whether you might spend Christmas here or in Chelan.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we loaded your stuff up and you came up to the village with me on the boat the next day and spent Christmas here that time.
Wow. That was, the village was supposed to have been full as far as the amount of people they could bring up on the snowmobiles and the sleds that came behind the snowmobiles. And I had the word from up here from Werner was no more room. And I thought, now what do? I can't go home because I haven't saved any money to go home. And what do? And where do I go for Christmas? But he came, and I came. It was a little surprise to a few people up here, but it was probably one of the neatest Christmases I've ever had.
Well, now what part did Darryl play in this?
It was an all night session. No, I'm not going, and yes, you are, and that sort of thing. And finally, he just said, "Go pack your bags. You are going." Because I could be a little stubborn too. So, it was just I don't know. I mean, it isn't important to the village. You know, it was important to me.
Mm-hmm.
For posterity. No, it isn't important. It was just that this was Christmas at Holden was about the most unique Christmas there could ever be. Because many, many people came as their own family. Many were single and became a part of their family and everybody else's family. And you didn't feel like you were alone. And I guess I don't want to cry, but I guess I can. I heard somebody else saying yesterday that they this is one of the places they could feel the most alone in, and I never felt that. I just, this was a community of people who were a lot of support as a person coming in 66. And as I worked,
I think that was an example, really, of what so much of Holden's ministry has been about. In especially those years that we are talking about now, years when Holden became life-transforming for so many people in ways that were not always very clear at first, but during the course of some interpersonal encounter, lives were changed, important things happened in people's lives. I think this was one of those, this Christmas experience, was one of those moments in which, and it was my judgment, that that being at Holden at this Christmas would have been was a very important time for Phyllis. Because I happened to be there to share some of that experience, I was closer to it than others who were communicating by letter with her. I just felt the gospel's big enough, we'll make this fit somehow.
Well, you were up the village then.
No.
I wasn't there before that, but I came up for Christmas to be the chaplain for the Christmas days.
Where were you?
At that time, I had finished the seminary and was doing an extended period of volunteer work, traveling in the interest of developing a funding base and
for Lutheran or
support for Holden.
Or for Holden. Okay.
For Holden.
All right.
Right. I've been in Southern California working with congregations and individuals there and was on my way up here to serve as a chaplain during the Christmas time. So that's how that happened.
I not only worked for Carol, I would have letters from Carol to do, from Werner to do. But when he started on this fundraising business, I also was working night and day for him, which was really fun, you know. Just,
were you the only secretary around?
Actually, I was, outside of what Judy Jansen finally got really bored and said, "Phyllis, can I do some of this?" And I said, "Judy." And she says, "Well, isn't it possible for me to do some typing?" And eventually I said, Judy, you know, you've got enough work to do up there, because she was the only female that was up here, basically.
Mm-hmm.
There'd be people in and out, but she had the housekeeping to do and the cooking to do. And but she says, oh, I want to do. And I said, do. And so she did most of the work after that with staff. The staff, there were form letters, then there was some typing, dictating type of things that she did, which I was grateful for, because it gave me it was a big load off my shoulders. And then during the summertime, yes, there were secretaries up here who worked directly for Carol or directly for Werner. Also, Werner, there was a dictaphone system, and maybe something about something that was really funny, maybe something that was quite serious, some of the parts of the community, so that I did not feel left out, you know. And it was, it's hard enough, you know, to go down that lake, down to the lake and go down the boat. And so that kept me in tune also, you know, and there were people that I I don't know what I was going to say now, but anyway, it's just a fun part of working. I treasure the years that I've had here, and I, more importantly, I guess, treasure this week of coming back.
Yeah.
That Christmas of 67 was a significant time. In a couple of other ways, as I remember it, not least of all because I also was it also marked the time when Joanne and I decided to get married. But that wasn't what I was thinking of in terms of the village. That winter marked the coldest temperatures that have ever been recorded at Holden, 33, I think, degrees below zero.
That's right.
And that happened during the time we were up here. I have some of the best winter shots that I took out and around the village between about 11:45 and 12:45, when the sun would make its appearance between Buckskin and Copper Mountain. That crisp, sharp weather created some wonderful slides. But it was also a test for us who were living in Koinonia to maintain enough warmth to stay comfortable during that time.
That's because the water wasn't running very fast, and they didn't really want to put the diesel generators on, because that costs money, and money was of prime interest, if you want to say, you know. And we just didn't spend anything more than was absolutely necessary.
And they didn't have the base heaters in the lodges either.
No.
Well, how many of the lodges did you have open then? Just one?
Just Koinonia.
Just Koinonia.
And
Chalet 1.
Okay. Well, so the lodges were closed completely.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And they had steam heaters in them anyhow, didn't they?
Had a wood stove here in Koinonia.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the source of heat in Koinonia.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that was true in the Chalet 1 too.
Yeah.
As a personal note on your part, what's this about Joanne? Well, was she on staff up there?
Yeah. Joanne spent the winter here that year.
Mm-hmm. I tried to get her to come in here, but
she was reluctant. She was here and actually was part of the first winter when there were women who stayed here through the winter. There had been only men previously in the wintertime.
That's Judy,
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As wife, Judy Jansen as wife,
And so that was the case, Joanne, and I think there were two or three other women that spent the winter here together. And we had developed a relationship over the last couple of years by that time. And so it was that I came up here at Christmas, and we made plans to be married. We were married in March 22nd of the next year.
Where?
In Minneapolis.
Oh. Mm-hmm. When did you finish Luther?
Finished in the class of 67.
Okay. When were you ordained then?
I was ordained in 1970. And there are a lot of incomplete sentences in between there, and
yeah,
probably more than there is tape to cover.
Yeah. I'm sure.
I finished the seminary and did not seek ordination immediately. Rather spent a few more months in volunteer work here at Holden, and then decided to take a year of travel and study and independent learning, which turned out to be around the world. I left in the fall from New York and came back the next summer by way of Hawaii. And then that's when Joanne and I began to think in terms of marrying. After we married, I was enrolled for a year-long residency program in clinical pastoral education at Lutheran General Hospital in Chicago.
That's where you met Fritz Norstedt there?
That's actually, Fritz was also a teacher at Luther Seminary, so I had met him there, but more closely when we were in Chicago.
Yeah.
And during the course of that year, which was 69-70, Holden decided to extend a call to me to come back as a permanent staff member, as a director of development, and as an assistant to Carol. And so we decided to accept that call, but that was not perceived as being a call to ordination, but rather a call to lay ministry.
Mm-hmm.
However, after we moved out here in the summer of 1970, the bishops of the American Lutheran Church came here on retreat in the fall of that year, and during the course of their visit, they consulted with me about whether I was seeking ordination and whether I wanted to pursue that, and it was not something I had expected, nor had I intended to do, but when they brought the inquiry to me, I decided to pursue that, and they unanimously agreed while they were here in session that this was an ordainable call, and that if it were my desire, I could seek ordination and be ordained on the basis of that call to Holden. So I was ordained then about a month or so later than that.
Where?
I was ordained in Webster, South Dakota, my home parish.
That's West Creve.
A home that I share with the founder of this place.
Yeah, West Creve.
West Creve, yeah. Yeah. Correct.
Yeah.
Huh. Wes and I go back a long way, although Wes has advanced one generation beyond me in age, so he had already left Webster by the time I actually moved there, and so I did not meet him until I came to Holden and discovered the kind of history that we shared.
Hmm. So you got ordained there.
I was ordained in Webster.
Upon the authorization of...
Correct.
What, some bishop?
Yeah, upon the authorization, really, of Bishop Solberg, who was serving then as a Bishop of the North Pacific District of the American Lutheran Church,
yeah,
and the district to which I was assigned.
Mm.
But Bishop Gilbertson, who was then serving as a Bishop of South Dakota,
mm-hmm,
was the one who actually ordained me.
I had known that before. I knew somewhere along the line. I could remember some of this because...
Yeah. Yeah.
We started coming up here in 65.
Yeah.
Missed 67 because of the New York Convention and Missouri Synod.
That's right. Yeah.
But otherwise, we've been up every year.
Yeah.
And more than that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in a way, I became the forerunner to the village pastor.
Yeah.
A concept that is now a routine position. But I was the first to function in a way as a village pastor, although my assignments were much broader than that. And
you remember who followed you? I'm trying to remember where Joel came in on the picture. Joel Oinous. He was in there someplace in those early things.
He might have been the one who followed me. I believe so. That's possible. We left in 73. Was that about the time Joel came?
I don't remember.
Nancy Winder.
No, that sounds
Came subsequently too, and I'm not sure whether she was before or after Joel.
Well, I'll
have to do a little checking on that. I can't remember.
All I know is that after, well, this has nothing to do with this particular interview, except that it's all part of the whole history.
Yeah, of course.
And Joel and Oinous met up here and got married and so forth. I mean, Joel and Gretchen.
Gretchen, yeah.
My daughter.
Yeah.
And then they went down and served Tekoa.
They were at Tekoa.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lucerne, that is. Mm-hmm. And then down to Lucerne first.
That's Tekoa.
And then finally out in 84, because they came over to my house in 84 and did some remodeling of the house. Which now they are in Waseca, Wisconsin.
Right, not 100 miles, probably from 120.
Yeah. Okay, let's come back to you guys. Let's talk just what in the time we have left, which is about 15 minutes here. Let's talk about the early programming. Yeah, what parts you had in there and what kind of it was and so forth. Who wants to start? What kind of program went on here at the village?
There were many, many, many faculty people. Not at the beginning of the summer, but as the summer grew on, C. Umhau Wolf was in here. Ivar Ivask, where we got the Song of the Waterfall, one of the Beanie sing.
Mm-hmm.
Dar Roa. We saw a picture of him the other day. He was part of that summer. Gerhard Frost. But there were many things going on at many times, and it began with, I suppose the day began following Breakfast with Mattins, and went from Bible study. There were choices for people. That would be Bible study and lectures in other fields. Not all Bible-based, but the gospel was the center, and of the thinking up through this. Paul Hain, Leo Bustead. Oh, help me! Yeah, it just Norm Hovel with the purple people. What was it?
Purple puzzle.
Herb Brokering. Just some marvelous things, and unfortunately, with Carol, with many Bible studies, but unfortunately, when you get caught up in doing one thing, you don't take part in what was going on, and all you would hear, but then. The evening would be somebody would be, I don't know if you would say it was preaching so much, but there would be the Vespers services, where then staff who could not, who were out on the pipeline, and didn't get in on anything. They practically took their dinner with them, you know. They did take their coffee break. But at least they would get to hear these people and become acquainted with them through Vespers, which was and still is the one place where we meet as a community. Just some really exciting things. People.
There wasn't any
communicators, and yeah, they were.
There wasn't any theme for the summer like we have now.
There was.
Yeah. Let.
Yeah. I think every summer had a theme.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think so. I think that there were a couple ingredients to the shaping of the program that I remember that were very valuable to me. First was, and those disciplines, many of them have prevailed until now. There was always the beginning of the day around the word. That would take different shapes, but it always happened at the beginning of the day, usually in connection with the breakfast meal. Then there was always an intentional time at noon for intercessory prayer.
Okay.
And a rhythm was developed around each day of the week,
mm-hmm,
so that for a period of time at noon, the community would gather in one place. Those who were able to do that, those who weren't, would in their own way, individually on their tasks, remember a particular emphasis.
Mm-hmm.
So that during the course of a week, there was a prayer intercession around the world emphasis, and then concluding the day with a gathered service of Vespers. That was the skeleton on which the program was hung. And then the other ingredient that I recall very much was the interdisciplinary dialogue. The Holden really in the first years became a place, a kind of mini university,
mm-hmm,
in which the people who came shared out of the vast perspective of the university setting, but all of it had an interdisciplinary connection with theology as a hook that seemed to draw those interdisciplinary offerings together. Poetry, literature, music, drama, geology, sciences, all of those disciplines were part of the educational offerings that occurred here, but they all had their connector with how those disciplines were undergirded by the gospel. And then themes were developed, themes that would lend themselves to the inclusion of all of those disciplines, as well as weaving them into the expression of the gospel. Some of the folks whose memories live on here in lots of ways, Arnie Flotten, I think of as one of the premier artists of our time. Still has some of his expressions carved into the altar which he was the architect of over in the village center, and the much like those who are selected today, I'm sure, were those who were ranked as top communicators in the settings where they taught year round. And they were people who were best at communicating outside of a manuscript, who were sometimes invited and sometimes even forced to put their manuscript aside when they came up here and to sit down with those of neighboring disciplines and share together from their heart how their particular discipline related to their faith and to their expression of life.
Where we all could understand. You know, with their $30 words became, you know, down where the majority of us were.
We're talking over your head.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what I like about it. Talk to you, right?
Yeah.
Truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nose to nose, eye to eye.
Right.
I can sometimes remember that there were two or three people who were sharing in a session thoughts and, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. of what was known then as faculty. Mm-hmm. And I did hear parts of those sometimes, and it was just really fun because there would be all these thinking things and batting back and forth maybe and but coming together in the gospel.
One of the ways in which those things expressed themselves was an evening forum that happened after Vespers.
It still continues.
Yeah. One of the ways in which several faculty members would often form a panel and would seek to interact with one another around a topic. And everyone would have a chance to get into that act from their own perspective. One of those topics I remember that long lived with me was time. And I think five or six different faculty people formed that panel to look at time from their discipline. If it were science, or if it were philosophy, or if it were art, or if it were theology, there was a way in which each of them came at their understanding of time. And what does it mean to be a Christian person living in time from those many different perspectives?
Any final words here on this whole bit here before we conclude? Or we're running out of tape?
Well, I can again only say that this is the greatest years of my life and the most fun time I've ever had. Yeah. And it was in the center of the gospel. Okay. In unpiety. Holy hilarity. That's I guess that's what I should say.
In
holy
hilarity. Long
no long faces. No.
Daryl.
Yeah, Holden for me is a place that has helped to give perspective to my life. It has been a place where I've been able to come to step back from the rigorous traffic patterns of everyday existence, and to look from a little bit away at what those traffic patterns mean to me, and have been given the privilege of sorting some of those things out and restoring a sense of priority and a sense of perspective, and that has been a retreat in a way that has permitted an advance to return to the daily patterns of life with a little better sense of perspective.
Good. Well, we thank you, Phyllis Anderson and Daryl Lundy. Good. This is Bill Dirks, archivist of the village, closing off this interview. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you, because this is, I mean, if we had known, we would have had some notes. Well.
Merry Christmas said the same thing. We don't need notes.
No, but would have done some other kind of recall, you know.
Well, it came on you in surprise anyhow. I mean, you didn't know you were going to do this.
Well, no, that's why I said we were going to do this, yes.
Okay, off on the phone.
Well, all right.
The reason I got a little warm, I had to call it so long. I had no idea that I'm close to it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a very definite line. Yeah, I can tell you. Except, yeah.